And we're live.
Hello, and welcome to episode number 9 of WP Cafe, the show where we chat with WordPress professionals about practical solutions for solo and small WordPress development teams. If that sounds like you, then don't miss a single value-packed episode. Subscribe to the HiRise Digital YouTube channel for more WP Cafe episodes and other WordPress developer-focused videos. There should be a subscribe button somewhere around your screen right now. If you are watching this live, please say hello in the comments and tell us where you're watching from. And also, if you have a WordPress security question, please ask them in the live comments. We will do our best to answer them live on the show. So today we are talking about WordPress security. Now, we all know that WordPress has a reputation problem with regards to security, and we know that taking security seriously is important, both morally and financially. But where do you start? What are the main threats facing WordPress websites? What are the steps that we need to take to mitigate those threats? What is a reasonable amount of security work within a project? And is there some kind of industry standard for all this stuff? In this episode, we'll discuss all of these questions and more with our two guests, Tim Nash and Chris Wigman. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks for having us.
So thanks so much for joining us today. Before we get into the questions, I would like to learn a little bit more about you and introduce you to our viewers. Tim, can you please introduce yourself and tell us a bit about your backstory with WordPress and what you're up to these days?
Oh, backstory with WordPress is a long time. Hi, my name's Tim. I am a WordPress security consultant, newly formed into a WordPress security consultant. Quite a few people will know me having worked previously for a large hosting company here in the UK. Before that, I ran a small dev agency which specialized in doing secure payment systems for WordPress. And before that, I did all sorts of wonderful things. I've been involved with WordPress since WordPress 1.6, 1.8, somewhere down in the adages of, you know, when we got to the 4 or 5 year mark, I was there at the parties. When we got to the 10 year mark, I felt old at the parties. So we're at that sort of level.
Very good. Cool. Very pleased to have you on the show, Tim. I'm looking forward to picking your brain about this stuff. Chris, I know you have a really interesting backstory too. Can you give our viewers a bit of an insight into your journey and kind of how you got to where you are with WordPress today?
Sure. I'm a pilot by trade. So when the second recession, my first day as a professional pilot was 9/11, which in aviation, of course, we all know what happened to security in that industry after that. Now, when the second recession was about to hit, my flight school called up and said, hey, how about you fix computers full time and we let you do any degree you want? I'm like, it sounds like a great time to switch careers. I was maintaining their website, and this was about 2007, 2008. It was before multi-site was merged in, so it had to be the 2.0 range of WordPress. But I started using it for the university at that point and building security plugins and stuff like that. So that's how I got into it. It was kind of by accident, just working for the university at the time. And today, of course, I work for WP Engine doing a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, I think I used your security plugin back in the day before it was bought. It was Better WP Security. Is that you?
That was the original thing. That's correct.
Yeah, I remember it. I definitely used that back in the day. So thank you for that. All right, let's get stuck in to some security questions. First up, I mentioned in the intro that WordPress seems to have a little bit of a security problem. In terms of, well, it has a reputation of having a security problem. So is that reputation justified? If so, why? If not, why not? And why do we have it? Tim, do you want to take that one on first?
So a couple of years ago, I went to a security conference, you know, a proper security conference, where I gave a talk with a friend called WordPress is a Security Dumpster Fire, Fight Me. It was great. It was a lot of theater and a lot of fun. What we got back from that was the sense that a lot of people were going, really were going to quite happily think that it was a dumpster fire and were quite willing to fight me, which was a little alarming. But no, it's not really deserved a reputation. The problem with WordPress is WordPress is a very accessible tool, and historically has been even more accessible. It's often pre-installed, it's the first thing, and it's now running nearly 40% of the top 100 million websites. People know it, it's very easy to get into. It's very easy to go and click and install stuff.
Yeah.
It's very easy to then not do anything with it. And so WordPress's bad reputation often comes from two sort of points. One, plugins and themes, which I'm sure we'll get onto. WordPress Core itself, while having security issues in the past, it's being well maintained, and there's an awful lot of people trying to break WordPress Core.
Mm-hmm.
It's possibly the most attacked in terms of penetration tests by both good people and bad people. So it is, from that perspective, fairly secure. Plugins and themes, not so much so. They're not getting tested quite as much. But the big thing is, it's going to be most developers' first thing. It's the thing that they learnt on. They learned PHP and they learned WordPress. And then they grew up and learned something else.
Yeah.
And because they grew up and learned something else, they only remember the bad stuff they did. And so they then go and take that bad stuff and say, well, everything must have been bad because I did bad stuff on it. And I think that's a lot of where that reputation is coming from. It's a lot of projection by people who perhaps don't do WordPress anymore, and they did really bad things, so they just assume everybody else did.
Yeah. Is it fair to say that there is a lot of really terrible WordPress code out there, like in terms of like plugin and theme code?
Yeah, I wrote terrible WordPress code yesterday.
Yeah.
I will write even worse code tomorrow, and then I'll look back at it, and I mean, I look at projects now and just go, how on earth did I write that? But it's worth remembering there is some terrible, terrible code sitting in the Linux kernel. There is terrible code sitting inside the Windows kernel. There is terrible code in Skype. Trust me, I've just been spending the last 20 minutes trying to get my microphone to work, and it keeps swapping back. Everywhere we have terrible code. What we can see with WordPress is its visibility, because WordPress is open source, we see all the code. And you can always find something and pick it up and say, look, this is terrible. You can ignore all the great code, but you can always find bad code somewhere.
Yeah. Chris, what's your take on the reputation issue with WordPress?
I'm going to echo a lot of what Tim said. There is parts where it's deserved, there's parts where it's not. I think one of the biggest issues with it these days is two things. One, the very low barrier of entry for developers. Yeah, I go back and look at this code I wrote. Maybe I shouldn't say this. I started writing better WP security as a computer science student because I wanted to have a code a real project. That code had its own issues. Jeffro, who used to be on the WordPress or WP Tavern, first time I ever met him in person was when he walked up to me and said, so you're that asshole who crashed all those websites after we had had a big mistake in its code. So there is that low barrier to entry issue and lack of, because you can do it, it's a platform. It's not the end product. Like Tim says, everything has bugs. If GitHub is a security incident, everybody hears about it but those are the big things. What about all the little bugs? I work for a host. We've rolled back releases with bugs in them. WordPress with 40% of the internet right now we just covered. Not only are those bugs going to cover an awful lot of different installations and not always be patched, but there's a lot of incentive for people. Why go after Joomla with maybe 1% of the internet if you're going to try to do an exploit when you can hope for another Panama Papers and go after WordPress installs and try to get the exploits there? So that footprint alone really does change the landscape for WordPress a lot more so than it does for other software applications.
I was going to say, it's almost the scale of its success is its downfall in a way, in that people want to attack it because they get a better bang for their buck if they're successful with those attacks, obviously.
And we've seen that with WordPress, or not WordPress, I'm sorry, with Windows. Windows was always known because of all viruses for a long time. You didn't get a virus if you were on Mac. Well, now we know Mac's more popular. That's no longer the case. If you're looking to exploit a vulnerability, go for the biggest chance to exploit it. And then there is a lot of issue with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've noticed as well that a lot of people. So we, you know, we're talking there about people like attacking WordPresses and trying to kind of hack it and find those vulnerabilities, but also people are also attacking the reputation. I see it all the time. Like a new CMS comes along and they'll take like direct shots at WordPress. Like, you know, don't risk your client's security. Don't, you know, come to our little bespoke CMS instead. So, and I think that really fuels the reputational side of things as well, which, you know, isn't helpful as a WordPress developer. But I think the benefits of what you talked about, like that low barrier to entry, and we don't really, I mean, you could argue that some of that's being eroded, but like we don't want to lose that too much, because I think that is what's so, you know, made this ecosystem so powerful. So maybe that security reputation is just something we're going to have to live with and manage, but hopefully try to improve over time. Mark, what are we going next?
I'm sorry,
go ahead, Chris.
I was gonna say, you're right on with that. WordPress isn't the underdog. It's cheap marketing to attack the big guy out there. We see this with Apple, we see this with Google. I mean, any big company, there's justifiable criticism, but it's still the big dog. So, you know, look at, and how many devs do you know today that want to learn functional style PHP? Oh, it's gotta be Laravel just on the PHP side. Don't even get me started with JavaScript. I mean, Which framework is popular this week with JavaScript? Oh, you don't use that? Well, your product must be crap. You know, we see it all the time.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on then. So I guess the next question is, what are the main threats facing WordPress websites? Is there any that are like really high up in the list, or is it just a broad spectrum of things that people are suffering from? Chris, we'll start with you.
There's a list out there called the OWASP Top 10. And open web, I can't even think of the full acronym off the top of my head.
Security something.
Yeah, that's the P, I guess.
Project,
thank you. It's too early in the morning for me, gentlemen, my apologies. And it lists things like misconfigurations, injection attacks, cross-site scripting, all of the classic attacks, all the types of vulnerabilities that affect all applications. I would say those are the core reasons for all of our WordPress vulnerabilities, compounded in WordPress by the fact that 90% of people who install WordPress aren't they don't care to maintain it. They want to sell their product. They want to write their content. They don't want to hit upgrade like they, you know, every time you hit, if you have a Mac, restart this computer now. We've been trained to, oh geez, I don't want to deal with this. Just put it off to later because something's going to break. So they avoid patching. You know, when WordPress, even plugin developers, you find a vulnerability and want it from one of those OWASP top 10 lists or anything else, you often see those patched really quickly. And the response rate is good. But if nobody installs the thing, what's the point? You know, that's where things tend to get. So it's a combination of, you can see any vulnerability in it, and people just don't apply the patch to fix it, is really, in my opinion, what the biggest issue facing WordPress is today.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, you do see a lot of, I see a lot of vulnerabilities in plugins, like, you know, here on Twitter, such and such has been compromised. And yet there's not many sort of people saying, oh, I've just patched my such and such a plugin because there was a patch been done. It's like the authors fixed them, but people have got to actually do the job of updating it, you know, and that's something that kind of is forgotten perhaps a little bit. Interesting. Yeah. So something that I've wanted to ask about security, and I guess this is a really hard question to answer, but as an agency who offer, you know, WordPress development services, is there like an industry standard list of stuff that we should really be focusing on as security conscious people to say to clients, look, you know, we take security relatively seriously as much as we can. We're not experts. And we do these things. I just wondered if there's a, you know, like if you think about accessibility, there's the WCAG guidelines that say, here, do these things and you're kind of covered. I wondered if there's something that is out there for security like that, that people could use as a guide to try and help them with this stuff. Tim, any ideas?
So OWASP is a good starting point. Okay. Indeed, that OWASP top 10 checklist. The problem is, that, and it's the same with accessibility, those guidelines are there and they last all of about 5 minutes before you talk to an accessibility expert. Right. And then they will tell you about why those guidelines don't mean anything and that why you should be doing it this way, and this way. And security is exactly the same. Also, security is a much broader subject in many respects, because when you talk to someone who is an InfoSec professional, they might be talking about websites and web applications, but they're equally as likely to be talking about networks. Okay. And there is a lot more standardization around network security, for example, than there is around application security. Again, that's down to the fact that we're talking about every single application.
Yep.
Across the entire spectrum. For WordPress, there isn't like a specific standard. The OWASP has a good set of guidelines for just generic application, which can be applied. And I don't want to give away too many dark secrets of security, but a lot of it's actually common sense.
Yep.
Just like, strangely enough, accessibility, a lot of it is actually common sense. And when you start thinking in the right, it's more about getting into the right mindset than it is about actually necessarily following a set of guidelines. The other problem with security is that as soon as the bad actor knows you're following a set of guidelines, I assure you they're just going to go off the paper.
Yeah, that's true. Anything to add, Chris?
Yeah. The only thing I would add to that with application security, especially in WordPress, is responsible disclosure. There really is a lot of framework and a lot of work around responsible disclosure. And if the biggest issue isn't necessarily the fixing of these issues once they're found, it's how do you get people to upgrade? You commented earlier, Mark, that you don't see plugin developers. I actually do see quite a few plugin. I mean, there's often the WordFriends folks, Chloe Chamberlain and them, that just do just absolutely phenomenal work in finding these bugs. But I do see folks like Pippin Williamson's groups, Sandhills Dev, or there's so many out there, but there's a good number out there that are, hey, we made a mistake. I think it was Content Kit, one of the marketing plugins yesterday. I saw a list, it wasn't security related, but a list of, yep, we screwed up on our next update. We tried something. We thought it was going to help. It didn't work. We're sorry. I do see a lot of disclosure like that. Now, that's not official responsible disclosure. There is actually, like, this is the timeline of, we report something to you. This is how we report it to you. We verify fixes. And that's all involved with more robust responsible disclosure. But there is a very strong framework available on that. And better use of it in WordPress, I do think, would help things quite a bit.
Okay. And responsible...
I was just going to, just to add to that one last bit, saying you screwed up, or saying, not even that you screwed up, saying there was a problem, you fixed it, you've pushed out that fix, and you're taking responsibility, it actually, you know, manages to often improve what your customers think about you. Yeah. You can monumentally screw up and end up with more customers. And I see it over and over again. And if you handle a security breach well, people are going to come to you and think, actually, even though you just lost all of our customer data, we trust you more. There's been some really good case studies where larger organizations have been asked whether they trusted them before and then trust them after a hack. And after the hack, the trust level went up because of the way that they disclosed it and behaved about it. So it's always a good idea to be upfront and honest, because it will actually gain you business in the end.
That's a good rule in general, I think, yeah. I was just going to come back to that responsible disclosure, just to make sure people understand. Am I right in saying that if I find a bug in, let's say, WordPress, or a security issue, the responsible disclosure is not telling the world about it and then telling the WordPress security team in private for them to chance to fix it? Is that what we're talking about there?
Yes, that gets into the framework. And then you get into CVE reports, which CVE is the, if you ever see CVE followed by numbers, that's typically the official, this was the vulnerability discovered. Okay. And then there's processes for, you have so much time to fix it. And we see this in the news when companies fail to do it. Google reports a vulnerability to Apple. Yep. You know, it's big news 90 days later because it hasn't been fixed yet. Right. We see those types of things, especially Google, because they've taken it, they have a very strict deadline with how they handle that stuff. There's no leeway. That type of thing is, and Most companies typically follow a very similar procedure, even if they're a little less rigid on it. But that's what we're getting into is, and like you say, yeah, report it to the developer. Don't blast it publicly. Yep. You know, there's a WordPress website out there that used to put them all online first, oftentimes without informing the developer, and caused so many problems.
Yeah. I've got a quick question. I think this is still on topic. It's like slightly off, but I think it's kind of ties into everything we're talking about. Mark and I, we've got a couple of kind of small plugins. One of the issues that we found, and this wasn't around security, but I can see how it directly applies to this conversation, is that it's actually very difficult to communicate with the people that have downloaded your plugin. So if there is a vulnerability and you patch it and you put your new version up there, we don't have any way as a plugin developer to just send out a message to all those people saying, this is a problem, please, please, please install this update. And I just wonder if there's, I don't know, some kind of should be or could be some kind of mechanism within WordPress that allows plugin developers to do that somehow. Because once that plugin's out there, you know, we don't have a list of email addresses. Maybe that's a good thing. But you know, it is actually very difficult to communicate with your kind of customers, stroke people who have downloaded your software. I don't know if is there an answer to that? Is there a better way, or is that just something we've got to live with?
I think that's WordPress.org specific, though, isn't it, Keith?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So .org specifically, the worst case scenario for security is that the plugins team has several options that they can use, one of which is that they can actually force push an update.
Okay.
Right.
It's used incredibly sparingly because, strangely enough, people get very upset when you do that and they're not in control. But if they deemed it really serious enough that they was like, oh no, we just need to get this fixed, they can force push it out. On a wider note, there has been discussions ongoing for about probably as long as WordPress has existed over how to handle notifications inside the WordPress dashboard and admin area, with several options free. The problem is, the moment you introduce any form of notification, you two would use it for good.
Yeah.
But you know that the moment you went to a company and the marketer turned up and went, sorry, did you just tell me that I have a side channel in every single one of our users and they can't stop me communicating with them? Thanks.
I get it. Yeah, I definitely get the issue around it.
I have one
fun history. I've been told I was the first plugin to use the admin notices for I've had a couple of people tell me that I'm the first known plugin to use admin notices for marketing. So
yeah.
As I talk about this, full disclosure.
I was just going to say, I wonder whether that sort of sending out of a message could go through WordPress.org. So there was a, like, is this a marketing crap? Then we'll know we're not sending it. But I don't know how that would work. But I just wondered, like, I need to tell my users about X. So I'm going to send it through there. I don't know. But just a thought.
Do you really want to be the person who volunteers to go through those messages
No.
and deal with the person who says, yeah.
It's not perfect. Okay. Don't get me wrong. Anyway. Keith, where are we going next?
I was going to say, real quick though on that, this goes back to what we were talking about earlier. You can, even with communication, people still have to install WordPress.org. Just the update notification, that's a pretty powerful, hey, something's there. Mm-hmm. All that information's right there. It blasts. Yeah, it's got the little circle. You have this many updates available. If people ignore it, all the notification in the world isn't going to change it. The pathways, even with private plugins, you can still make use of that update. So the pathways are there, but it's the education of convincing people that this isn't Windows. If you hit update, this isn't going to take an hour and you're going to lose everything you're doing. It's that education and those issues.
There's just no differentiation between like a feature update and a security update. I think that's maybe that's maybe one of the problems. But mm-hmm. If there was like something that's red, it's like you should really be doing this, then that would really help. But
then we go back to Tim's point. Everyone's updates would be red because they wanted to.
Exactly. Yeah.
If Semver was better understood with WordPress developers, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
Are you guys familiar with Semver?
I don't know if familiar is the right word, but go on. Give us a brief.
Just major, minor patch. versioning. WordPress used to kind of do it until they look like they do it until you realize that they every minor version is actually a major version. So you have they do patch, but then nothing else is part of Semler. So a lot of plugin developers adopt. Well, it's all over the freaking map. Let's not even say they adopt anything. But through Semver, that's the whole purpose of it, right? Is to say, okay, this is a safe upgrade. You should do it. It's a patch. This is a minor upgrade that will break nothing going backwards. Go ahead and upgrade. You might get some new features out of it, but it's not as big a deal. And then, of course, major versions. Oh, this is going to, you need to wait on this or watch this. Make sure that you go back, blah, blah, blah. That type of thing, if there was any real standardization about that, would probably be helpful. But how would you enforce that standardization?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Tricky.
One of the things to do is to make your security, and this is something that a plugin developer can do, is make your security patches separate. So that you, when you're doing a security update, you isolate that out and just say, this is a security update. Mm. Now that comes back down to the fact that you're now highlighting that.
Yeah.
And a lot of plugin developers, particularly, and theme developers, choose to put it in the, oh, we fixed a security bug. The last line, or the line before the last line of the changelog. You don't want it on the last line. That's too obvious. Yeah. You want it somewhere middle to bottom of there. Oh, we fixed this really minor security bug that just gave everybody total access to your site. No biggie. Bye. Whereas if you made that actually its own patch release and said, this is a security bug, people would be able to at least see the changelog. Oh, right, that one's important. I should definitely install that one. Oh, do I really want my admin bar now in blue? Yeah, that's not so important for me. But when those two get mixed together, then you get this problem. And this isn't rocket science. Open source projects have been doing this for decades. And big PHP ones too. I mean, if you compare it to things like Drupal and Joomla, they both have security patching. Release cycles. WordPress is sort of a bit of a weird one that it doesn't, and it because the security patches get bundled in. They're getting better, and on the whole, those minor releases tend to be security patches. Also, the security team themselves do have their own patch releasing system, so they don't necessarily have. They can be done alongside WordPress core releases, so there is a mechanism for them to get out their releases ahead of scheduled maintenance releases, which is at least good, because at one point. They would be they'd be like, oh yeah, security patches, yep, but we just need to wait 6 months while the next minor release is being sorted out. That doesn't happen anymore. If something needs fixing, it gets fixed and it gets patched out. And there seems to be a lot more now automatic updates are in place. They're much keener on releasing more regular cadence, whereas before it was a long time between patching.
Yeah, way too. I think that brings us on to updates quite nicely, actually. We've had a couple of questions about updates. So Neil in the chat on YouTube says, is auto update a way forward to secure a site? And we had a question via Twitter, which was, how should I handle updates? Auto updating at the risk of the site breaking or manual update and the risk of not having the updated in time, if that makes sense. So I just wondered what your take was on whether we should all just be saying, let the thing auto update, or what do you think, Chris?
I think the biggest thing that you should add to any WordPress site for updates is a backup system you can trust. Because for 99% of all update issues, the absolute worst case scenario is it breaks something in a way you don't understand, and that's where your backup system comes in. I understand that there are some sites whose content is so real time that any backup system can quickly become problematic. That is not the average small business site. That is not the average freelancer or personal site. If you're blogging once a day, what's your worst case? You might lose a comment, but there's so many excellent backup systems, some built right into your host, some, you know, WP Engine, and I don't mean this as a plug on WP Engine, I'm just familiar with it. Anytime you hit update in the WordPress admin, we pop up a notification, hey, have you taken a backup yet? And we have other mechanisms to handle updates on top of that, but that's the most basic thing. And that's the way you should always apply updates. And if you have a good backup system in place, it should, in a worst case, which is a fairly rare thing, you might lose a few minutes. It does happen. Yeah. But that's kind of the price of owning one of these sites, right? If it is a security update and you haven't updated and that's exploited, you're losing a lot more than a few minutes that you did to take a fresh backup.
Yeah, makes sense. So you would auto update, or would you make sure you press update? I'm not sure. Would you leave
it? I auto update with backups.
Yeah.
I have daily. Well, my current site, full disclosure, is hosted on WP Engine for, well, obvious reasons. So they do daily backup snapshots anyway. Yeah. But I only blog once a week. Before WP Engine, I had Backup Buddy. I've used Jetpack's backup plugin. I've had other backup plugins too that I just keep it on a once a day. Update once a day, and the absolute worst thing I'm going to lose is a few comments. Yeah. Once I notice something's wrong, uptime monitors. There's all kinds of things you can check for, but 99% of the time, if an update breaks your site and it's a site like that, well, by lunchtime, somebody's going to be emailing you, "Hey, think something's wrong with your site." Yeah, I've done it to folks. I think we all have here, and we've all received that stuff too. So, if you have a backup, oh crap, roll back. Done.
Yep.
Usually, almost no issue at all.
Yeah, I think that makes complete sense. One thing, Tim, I know you have always mentioned don't use your host's backup. So I don't know if you've got anything to add to that, because obviously a lot of what Chris said was my host has got my back, basically.
Yeah, your host will always have your back, and no, I mean, even when I worked for a host, I would go around preaching never use your host's backups as your primary source, because it's not yours.
Yep.
They are your host's backups. They're not your backups. And there are a multitude of scenarios where that might not work for you. So I would always recommend taking a second backup. If you don't, by all means, don't turn off your host backups. They're a lovely backup to the backups.
Yep.
But also, quite a lot of hosts, WP Engine's backup system's quite nice. Plenty of hosts' backup systems are not nice one-click things. They're download the zip, upload the zip, do the left, turn it light, and a bunch of other stuff. So build a backup system that works for you and works for your workflow. I would, however, say that 99.99% of sites should be on automatic updates.
Okay.
For WordPress. I genuinely cannot see a scenario for a small or medium-sized development agency where you want to be clicking buttons, because that's what you are. You've just become people who go, oh, it worked. The failure rate on automatic updates is remarkably low. And worse, when you were doing the testing, what testing we, for the vast majority of, some people are going to be on watching this and go, well, I do both functional units and acceptance tests across every time I do a backup, and I do this and I do that. That's brilliant. But when you're in hospital, you don't do that.
Yeah.
And presumably you want to go on holiday. And you're not, so and even if you are doing all of that, that's even fantastic, because you can automate that and that, just have the computer do it for you. For the rest of us, we're probably going to the web, going, click the update, and we're probably going to the homepage going, yep, WooCommerce hasn't broken. Swell. Do a check, go through the checkout. Maybe on a WooCommerce site, you probably are. On Yoast site, are you even going, if you're updating Yoast, are you actually even looking in the source code to see if anything's changed? No, probably not. You've probably just gone to the homepage and gone, oh, is it up? The thing is, computers can do that for you.
Yep.
Sure.
A simple uptime checker will be able to tell you whether or not you have a white screen.
Yep.
So this is more about just getting your balance right. As long as you're doing a backup before your automatic updates, you're doing your automatic updates and your uptime checkers checking immediately afterwards, why are you sitting there pressing that button? That is a waste of your time. Worse, because it's time consuming, you won't do it daily. You're going to go, we'll do it all on a once a month. So once a month, you spend a good 2, 3, 4 hours hating yourself because you're pressing buttons, and all you're doing is going click, ooh, click, ooh, click.
Does that sound familiar, Mark?
And at the end of this, if something goes wrong, you're going, oh, click, I'll just restore the backup.
Yeah.
But when was the last time it went wrong? It didn't. And the very few times that it has gone wrong, it will be because that, you know, that month where you forgot to do the updates, and the longer that period becomes, the more likely and more fragile things are to break.
Yeah,
keeping things in a rhythm and keeping them up to date and everything up to date at the same time.
Yeah.
Completely. It doesn't. You're never going to have a perfect scenario. Things are always going to break. But trust me, just because you pressed the button or whether the computer pressed the button, it still was going to break.
Yeah.
So you might as well save yourself the time. And yes, there is a chance that if the automatic updates are at 3 in the morning, you won't know about it till 7 a.m. Does that really matter? If you really care that much, then you make the uptime checker ring your phone and get you out of bed at 3 a.m.
Yeah.
I doubt you'll get that call very often. So I'm a massive proponent of automatic updates.
I think you're right that going from A to B is less risk than going from A to D. You know, so if you keep it going all the time, it's going to be more sensible. I think we've added a question. I think it was one of you two added the question to the show notes, was how to sell security to clients, and this kind of rings in with that, because if I say to a client, well, oh, we don't check the updates, they just run on the update. And if it breaks, then we'll just restore the backup, or you know, it might be down for 10 minutes. I can't sell that. They'll be like, "Oh no, we don't want that. We'll take the option of clicking the button and doing it that way." I just wondered if there's a way of selling that to clients and saying that's the best way.
You have just sold it. You're not doing it. We have built an automated system that does automatic updates every daily. We've got it backing up from these sources. We're doing this. We've taken this step away from us. So we're not manually doing it. Some development agencies, they still wait around for a month and then they'll press the button manually. They'll even try to claim that that's better. But in that month, your site got hacked.
Yeah.
Whoops. Yeah. It's a fairly simple sale, really.
Yeah.
Do you want us to have a horse still attached to the cart, or would you like a shiny engine in your car? I mean, it's on a similar sort of par. By the way, we're not going just down the road. We're going to, you know, 100-mile journey. But I think it was me who added the question, sell, because actually, you managed to set up these updates, you know that one day a month you were using, literally a day a month for doing updates to all your clients, you've got that back. So now you can start implementing other features. You can start building on that. And you can even just setting up updates just so they're minor updates. It means that you can now properly test major updates to things. Now you know about the features of those proper updates because you've actually had a chance ahead of time to find out what the latest thing is. You can now communicate that to your clients. You can now say, hey, by the way, we've just looked at this plugin. We know that it's the up and coming release of it because we've been beta testing it. Yeah, we beta test things. How cool is that? We're not just pressing the button a month later. We beta tested it. We've seen this great feature, which is going to be perfect for your site.
Yeah.
Let's talk about how we implement that.
Yeah, cool.
You could and more importantly, even if they're going, right, we've got this latest stuff, you can start building in your security processes and you can't start telling your clients about how you're doing this stuff. They are going to sit there going, these people know what they're doing. Shit, I'm glad we employed them and not those silly people down the road who were pressing the button every month. It can easily become a sales pitch.
Yeah. I guess...
Sorry to anybody who's pressing the button. Not
silly. I guess sticking with the question then, how to sell security, is there any, perhaps away from backups and updates, is there anything else maybe, Chris, that you think, you know, should we be mentioning it in proposals? How do we sell the fact that, you know, security is really serious and a lot of people probably don't take it as serious as it should be?
Sure. Well, the point of view of a small agency, you already hit on a lot of that. That's 5%, you know, 20 working days on average a month, right? So now 5% of your time, if you're losing a day as a freelancer a month to do updates, 5% of time is a hell of a return on investment. How do you increase, you know, how many companies do you see? What's your goal for this year? We want to increase 5 to 10%. There's your 5% right there as far as getting time back. That's always been a big sell as far as I'm concerned right there. On your all side of the pond, now, US side, at least regulatory-wise, couldn't care less if people use their data, gets out for the most part and all this and that other than the bad PR. But on y'all side of the pond, you also have GDPR. And I realize UK is, I shouldn't just say all side of the pond, things have changed a little bit in that regulatory landscape. However, there still are regulations. It's far easier to say, hey, my site was down for an hour than, hey, we didn't patch for a month. We were exploited. And, you know, the Panama Papers, I keep bringing back up because it was such a big thing in the news. For anybody who's not familiar, Panama Papers was a law firm. I think it was actually in Panama. Sometimes name and geolocation don't always line up. But it released a hell of a lot of information on high-powered politicians and everything all over the world who were using it as a tax haven for all practical purposes. A lot of legal, you know, legal gray lines, things like that. And if I remember correctly, it was, I think it was WordPress that they were on, or maybe it was Drupal. It was an open source CMS that wasn't properly secured and updated. Well, that's a hell of a lot higher, you know, when you're talking about security, that's of course an extreme, but try explaining that one to your clients versus, yeah, sorry, site was down for an hour for maintenance. On a more regular approach, if you have 20,000 users on your blog with comments and all their email, and you're collecting maybe, you're selling a course. How many JavaScript courses pop up a week? You sell 20,000 copies of this thing. You've got their email address. You've got their physical address, all this information. Site's down for maintenance for an hour. Sorry, you can't take your course. Whoa. Oh, all your information's out there. Now you need to change password. I would suggest contacting your bank and make sure you've locked down and all that stuff. That's definitely a harder thing to sell.
That's a very good point, yeah. Okay, that's good. Let's move on. I've got a couple of things left to chat about. I don't know if Keith's got anything else to bring in.
I'll let you go first if you want.
Okay. I wanted to bring in security code reviews because I know, Tim, you've moved into this as a consultant and doing like code reviewing things, and I'm sure, Chris, you've seen a lot of code and had to look at it, whether it's for the host you're working for or other things. And I just wonder, what is the sort of the biggest things you find that developers do wrong that are a big security no-no in sort of when you do those reviews? Is there any big things that you think, everyone's doing this and I wish they'd stop, you know, that sort of thing? Tim?
I wish they'd stop writing code. I think that would be fundamentally fantastic for the world as if we just stopped writing code. On a more serious note, escaping and sanitizing inputs, trusting themselves. This is all about trust. Whenever somebody develops code, they always assume everybody has the best of intentions. And you got to remember them. Security vulnerabilities, we call them security vulnerabilities, and we seem to give them their own special category. They're bugs.
Yeah.
Or worse, sometimes they're features. There are plenty of times where a security vulnerability is a genuine feature. Someone thought was a great idea, and then about 10 minutes later discovered was a terrible idea. When escaping and sanitizing data, when you're putting stuff into the taking any form input and going, yeah, I totally trust what that form says, I'll just shove it in the database. And when it's coming out of the database, oh, I totally trust that whatever I was in that database must be what I want to give to the end user. I'll just throw it straight back onto the page.
Yep.
That sort of mistakes turn up a lot. The bigger one is probably themselves and trusting themselves. And so they people just don't think that it's going to be abused. So they'll write the code. They won't write any tests to go with that code. They'll just go, well, it works the way I meant it to.
Yeah.
And never think, well, what happens if I change this parameter? And that's a mindset thing. So, and you can see it in code. You can see when someone is writing defensive code, where someone's thought through the, what happens if I do this? What happens if they do that style scenarios? So bad code doesn't smell in terms of it, the way it looks or the smell. It nearly is always in terms of flows. It's when you're sitting there going, well, there seems to be a remarkably lacking in any sort of validation of any of this, and that's when sort of alarm bells ring and you're going, okay, I'm going to start looking at this really bit more carefully to see what I can do with it. I think for me it's a mindset thing almost more so than an actual mistake. People are just not thinking, oh, I should probably check whether this can be abused in some way.
I think we're all guilty of that, just coding how you think it's going to work and not necessarily how it might end up being working.
Oh, totally.
Definitely.
And I am. I'm equally as guilty as anybody else, which is why it's good to have a third party look at stuff, because there's been plenty of times someone's looked at mine and gone, are you sure you want to do that? This is where things like pair programming is really great, or just internal reviews and pull requests and things. Having a second pair of eyes looking at your code brings a new perspective, and they, especially if they don't know what was in your head, they are more likely to find those weird paths that you didn't think about.
That's a really good point. Chris, anything to add on that?
The biggest thing I'd like to see more is use the tools we have available. Especially, we're talking largely on the PHP side of WordPress, and this goes out the window a little bit when you get into Gutenberg and React. But use the coding standards. They flag an awful lot of security issues in your code. They'll flag you if you're echoing something that should have been sanitized. They'll flag you on not validating. They'll flag you on bad nonsense. They'll flag you on all kinds of little security things all throughout your code. But between use the coding standards and implement a process, if you're two people, there's no reason you can't, for a small agency, yep. Agencies are horrible in my experience at code reviews. Establish something with a pull request system where at least a second person signs off on it. Yep. Yes, it's going to add a couple minutes, but if they actually take the time to look at the code, even if it's not as often as it should be, you find one bug in a month, that extra 5 minutes they spent over just hitting approve the other 99 times, maybe just saved you an hour from dealing with an angry client as to why something broke. So use the processes involved, and the WordPress coding standards in particular are such a valuable resource for WP PHP.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because like Mark and I, we're a two-person team, so I couldn't sign Mark's code off because I don't understand what he's writing, and vice versa. It's definitely something you lose out on with being like either solo or like a small team, is that learning that pair programming thing. And I wonder, I guess the coding standards and having that kind of baked into your development workflow is probably one of the best ways to get around that, and to kind of give you that little boost to help you know you're doing things the right way. So that's super useful. I wanted to kind of, guess maybe should have been one of the very first questions we asked, but we've kind of got into the weeds and it's been great, but there's some kind of really top level things that we haven't really discussed. One of them I'm interested in is, why do people hack websites? What are they usually trying to do? What do we need to be scared of? Like what's going to happen if your website is hacked? Like, what are some of the reasons for that? Tim, have you got some horror stories for us?
We could do the horror stories. We could do. Let's do the horror story first. The Panama Papers is a good example.
Yeah.
That was a team of people who went in. They probably exploited three separate plugins. They probably went in. The initial hack was almost certainly, if it's as people suspect, they had an out of date version of RevSlider, which allowed them to get a web shell actually onto a WordPress website, which then allowed them to pivot to another plugin that sent emails out as a newsletter broadcast.
Right.
Now, why that was important is because all the stuff for the Panama Papers, all the private data was on a totally different server. But to get that, they needed to get to that remote server. Now, conveniently, the site had this email broadcasting solution, and the person whose credentials were being used in the SMTP username and password happened to be able, the same logins that they use for the other servers, and so they were able to get through that way. It's a good example of pivoting and how scary things are. Mm-hmm. So imagine that scenario. We could easily apply that to a children's charity. In fact, I do. That's my scary story, that if anybody's ever been to one of my talks, where it all goes black and bits, that was where it's coming from. But that could easily be the NHS websites. Yeah. There are plenty of small agencies who do work for medical agencies where they hand over the site to a person who's in marketing, and the marketing person has just enough access to get to SharePoint. And that's on and from SharePoint, you can get pivot again. So that's the really scary stuff. And it could happen to almost anybody. But the vast, vast, vast majority is automated stuff. And they're trying to do one of three things. They want to use your email to broadcast messages. They want to use your CPU and computer processing power either to take out somebody else's site, to hack other sites, but more likely, they just want to put a Bitcoin miner on there and just ramp up the CPU usage. Mm. And the third one is, you see less and less, but it's for the shits and lols. That's the sort of defacement and bits. Now, we are seeing things that are up-and-coming ones. Ransomware is a good common scenario that seems to be happening more and more. Though ransomwareing an individual website is a bit pointless. It doesn't make them the money that they would like. Because annoyingly, people are learning backups. And hosting companies are learning backups. But this leads you into a nice scenario where we're talking about backups for your hosting company, using separate backups for your hosting company. What the ransomware teams have been doing instead is just getting ransomware on the hosts, servers, and systems, and then locking out the web hosts.
Right.
And once you've locked out the web hosts, you can ransom them instead, because now they have all their clients who don't have access to anything, including the host backups. Hence, you're getting separate.
Okay.
But for the vast majority of them, they're not after you. They don't care about you. You're not important. you are they are an automated script. No one's attacked your site.
So
that is a sad thing.
How do you know, as a WordPress website owner, if someone has installed some kind of Bitcoin mining system on, like, or they're using your email?
Your site got really slow very quickly. A reasonable chance your host is telling you things like, "Hi, just to check, you haven't started taking your new client isn't perhaps a Canadian pharmacy, is it?" It's a common one, but yeah, generally your host is going to tell you quite quickly. You're going to start seeing files and things appearing on your systems that you just don't recognize. So if you happen to be up, but once a site's set up, how many people actually SSH in and go, "Ooh, I'll just look at my file system today because that's what I do." But you might start noticing, hey, those weird files are there. Where it is proper defacement, where they're trying to put malware on other people's systems, so they're adding links and SEO spam into your website, you're going to spot that quite quickly. And the worst case scenario, if they are distributing malware through your website, is you find out that perhaps the most terrifying way is when you click off Google, go to Google, you click on the website in the search engine result, and it comes with a big red screen telling you about the malware that you now have. That is possibly one of the worst case scenarios.
Yeah.
Not because you've been distributing malware, that's terrible, and you're bad people and you shouldn't have done that. No, that's going to take you a long time to fix.
Yeah.
Because now you have to clean that up, but you also have to convince Google that you're going to be good boys and girls. So from your content marketing people are going to be very upset with you. So you ideally want to stop it before that stage, because you know there's nothing more grumpy than someone who isn't getting their SEO traffic.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, in terms of like the automated attacks, what's the most common ways in, Chris? Like, is it weak passwords? Is it, you know, something at a kind of hosting level? Is it, you know, how are these hackers getting in with automated attacks?
Most of the time, in my experience anymore, it used to be where you saw the brute force attacks, and you know, you played these games like hide the login area. That's all garbage security. That's just, you know, if you move the door to the side of the house, the door is still there. Just walk around the side and get to it. It's making use of the plugin vulnerabilities, that the footprint's now large enough, and there's a large enough base of people that, I, you know, how many domain names have we all bought over the years? Been like, I've got this great idea. I'm gonna buy the domain name. And 6 years later, you realize you're still paying for it, even though you've done nothing with it. Same thing happens with sites. I've got this great idea. I'm going to spin up this blog. I've got these great thoughts on politics, hacking, security, whatever it might be. You write a post, you forget about it for 3 years. So now you have vulnerabilities because you have old plugins. It's those finding those plugins. They don't, at least in WordPress's case, you often don't need the others. Once you get to the point where you can execute PHP through a plugin vulnerability, passwords don't matter. If you want somebody's password audit, you can grab the salt, you can grab the password hashes, and you can start working from there. You can just reset password. I mean, you can do all kinds of mischief, at least on regular. Now, this doesn't apply to Panama. Let me rephrase this. This doesn't apply to targeted attacks. Targeted attacks and automated regular attacks, if you're targeted, get professional help. End of discussion. For all these automated stuff, they're not after your password. They're simply after vulnerabilities in the site. Now, if you put admin in password, that might still be a thing, and that still happens. But the vast majority of these things are getting in through just vulnerable files already on your system.
Okay. Yeah, good to know.
I think that brings us nicely onto a question that I wanted to ask. And I just did want to ask, if anyone is watching and have a question for Chris and for Tim, then do let us know. We'll get onto some of those shortly. We're nearly done the hour, but we'll see what we can get crammed in. And that was about security through obscurity. So you see a lot of advice out there about, like, exactly what you just said there, Chris, move the login page to somewhere else and so forth. Is there any merit in doing that, or is that just utterly useless? Should we not bother, Chris?
I gave you a story earlier about when I first met Jeffro from WP Tavern. The feature that broke was a hide login area from better WP security. That, frankly, even then, that was 7 years ago now, I wanted out of that plugin. Then we knew it was garbage. Okay. There is no value at all to hiding the login area anymore, period. I see a lot of people try to claim otherwise. Oh, well, it's going to reduce. No, it's not reducing anything. The chances of your site being hacked through a brute force because they just happen to find a login area, instead of let's just, you know, if you don't want to do login area, maybe you have XML RPC on, maybe you have WordPress REST API on. There's seven other ways now, well, not literally seven, but there's numerous other ways than WP login that you can try a site. If you have a forum, your login page is on the homepage. What the hell are you trying to hide the dashboard for? And I still see stuff like that happen. Now, there is absolutely zero value to hiding to obscurity in WordPress anymore.
Okay. Thought so. Anything to add, Tim? Or?
I mean, I'm going to obviously echo everything that was said. The two things I would say, there's slightly why obscurity sometimes works, it will only work for a short period. Because once someone finds it, that's it. You are literally just, if you put a cloak over the door and don't bother to lock it, then you still have an unlocked door. There are a couple of times where the obscurity brigade will bounce and they'll say things like, you shouldn't have a username as admin. And to be honest, if your password's strong enough, have a username called admin and a big long password. The only reason to not have a username called admin is it's a really handy way of instantly detecting a bot, because the first login attempt is to add admin. You can just go, okay, you're a bot, and block you straight away. That's not necessarily security by obscurity. That is just building a better mechanism for doing some blocking. But yeah, hiding your login form, but hiding usernames, that's the one that really winds me up. Because usernames, you hear it all the time. I must hide my username. Why? I know who you are. You give me your name. You don't go around in public going, I can't tell anybody my name's Keith. I'm just going to go, what's your name? It's the same thing. I mean, it's pointless. It's your username isn't the secret part. Now, if you're going around going, hi, my name's Keith, and my password is 1234.
Yeah.
Oh, and here's my two-factor authentication. Yeah. That's slightly different. You need to have a conversation with a therapist more than anything. But yeah, so hiding your usernames, pointless. And the really frustrating thing is they'll go, we've hidden it in /author. And you go, okay, did you do it in the REST API?
Yeah, exactly.
No? Cool, because the REST API has Gravatar links that have your email address in an MD5 hash. So I really feel that your username is the last thing on that list that you should be worrying about.
Yeah.
Cool. And you know, it's funny as you say that, Tim, too. I love that you bring up the username. That was another one that, frankly, I defended that for a while, because 13 years ago when I started that security plugin, there was still some value there, right? Because people were running dictionary attacks on logins and stuff if they could find them. And that's so completely, the login mechanisms, there's now so many of them. But you're right, even hiding usernames, that's authorization versus identification. And that's something we don't emphasize all that well in WordPress sometimes.
Yep. Good advice. I thought that was the case. I just wanted to check. I think that'll be good for our listeners to know.
Can
as
you
well.
Tell we're both passionate about that one?
Absolutely, yeah. That's good. Keith, have you got a last question before we get on to some?
Well, I think we should touch on plugins.
Yep.
As in security plugins. You know, great to have Chris on, obviously, for this particular question. But are there any security plugins that we should be using? You know, are they pointless? You know, what's the best one if there is a good one? You know, what's the state of play around WordPress security plugins? We'll start with you, Chris.
I still have WordFence on my site. I do it partially to support their work. They do a lot of great work around the security space in WordPress.
True.
I do like keeping two-factor on my site because I don't always log in very often. And like Tim was talking earlier, one of the comments Tim made was, and this is an excellent way of doing things, if somebody logs in with the word admin, just immediately block them. Yeah. WordFence does all that regardless of what host I'm on, so I pretty much use it for that type of thing. I have a whole lot of rules in there of if this username, block them instantly, you know, block them easy. And it's just are there better ways to do this? Yeah, you could do it at the server level. But WordFence does a very good job, as much as can be possible at the application level, of handling that all for you. So yeah, I still use it. I still recommend it to most casual users. I mean, if you're really gonna host your own thing and you wanna start getting into Nginx rules or Apache rules and start setting up IP tables and start setting up all the things that can happen at the server level, do it. Yeah, frankly, that's still a better, the sooner you stop something, of course, the better, right? But to put something in the application, WordFence is an effective plugin. And it is for a casual user, I do recommend it. It's, and that's 90% of, I think, the people that we're trying to reach with this talk. So yeah, I would recommend that one very safely.
Yeah. Cool. Tim, any thoughts on that?
Well, I'm going to sort of take the opposite, slight opposite line in that I did some research a few years ago and realized that going through a host's sites that had got hacked on a host and realized you were as likely to be hacked whether you had a security plugin on than if you weren't. So things like WordFence will defend against certain attacks. Yeah. But that doesn't stop the most basic things. And to be honest, keeping things up to date will always beat. If you're just going to install a security plugin and say, I am done, then that isn't going to work. They all have their uses. They're all fantastic at doing certain things. Personally, for two-factor authentication, I prefer to use, there's a specific plugin called 2-factor, which is done by the WordPress security team. It's an independent standalone plugin. The idea is it's ultimately going to go into WordPress core. So that's the one that I recommend. But yeah, a lot of these things, if you're just going to turn a security plugin on and say, that's it, I'm secure, then you're going to have problems. Mm-hmm. They all can have benefits. I'm never going to tell someone to turn a security plugin off, but I don't immediately jump to using a security plugin. I would say that if you're on a good hosts often do things better than the security plugin ever will. Actually, a really good example is that limiting login, which so a good host will almost certainly have some sort of brute force detection system via either their WAF or they'll have something like fail to ban set up on their access logs and it will be blocking. In fact, in that scenario, having something like WordFence on may actually be doing you harm than good. You can end up in a scenario where WordFence is going, right, I am going to be very aggressive and I will block every single failed attempt, whereas the host might be setting it to 5 logins. But they might be using that heuristics across their entire hosting system. So you may be actually not giving the host the data they need to make intelligent decisions.
Yeah,
the other thing is that if you're properly being attacked on, let's say, over IPv6, and someone decides to flood you with a million IP addresses, you're going to find that that database, your WordPress database is going to fall over a lot quicker than the server is going to fall over. So there are massive benefits to doing that sort of work at the server level. So I'd always try and say, look at what your host does, and then supplement that if you have to. Mm-hmm. But I'm very much in the get your host to do it or do it yourself at the server level. Application level, there are some times where actually having an application level WAF works when it knows some more extra context. It knows that if you have to be logged in and doing X, Y, and Z for this to occur. But equally, something like a decent WAF on a by your hosting company, and this is ironic, normally shared hosts actually have better WAFs than more expensive hosts because they don't care, they just want to stop attacks, so they'll just put the WAF as they'll literally go on the slider and put it at extreme, and then they'll whitelist rules. Whereas when you get to other hosts will take a more tailored approach or will not even turn on the WAF unless you ask them to. So this is one of the times, if you're on a really cheap shared host, you might actually have better protection than on a very expensive plan. so never say turn it off of security plugin, but I wouldn't be reaching for them first.
Okay. Yep.
They would be supplementing a good update strategy. And that's really where I'd be putting my money.
It sounds like things like the limit login plugins, like you said, it's the host should really be guiding the user as to whether that's beneficial or not, really, and telling them to yay or nay, don't use it or do use it. Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Right, Keith.
We said earlier, the best spot to block is on the network before it gets to your server.
Yeah.
The next best spot is to block at the server level. And then if it gets to the application, it's already gotten through 2 security levels anywhere. It should have. So like I hope I preface that with, I have WordFence still on my site, but it's because I'm too lazy these days to run my own server, and WP Engine does a hell of a lot of that stuff themselves. I used to use fail to ban and everything. It's not a replacement. A plugin is never a replacement for server level security, and that part I want to make sure we emphasize.
Cool.
That's great. Sure. I think we should we should probably wrap up. It's been great, guys. Thank you so much for all your insights. Do we have any last questions from Got a question from Matt Medeiros of Matt Report fame, but it's unrelated. It's a question for Chris. He said, I'd love to read a blog post on his experience with iOS versus Android from a data privacy perspective. So that's something completely aside. There you go. Matt has asked you to write a blog post, Chris, so I'd get busy with that. Yeah. I think that's it though for questions and topics, and probably a good spot to wrap it up.
Yeah, okay. So Tim, where can people sort of find out about you and follow you on the web? Is there any links or things you want to tell people about?
My website, timnash.co.uk, has blog posts about security and other stuff. If timnash.co.uk/security will take you to the security stuff. If you're looking for me on places like Twitter and LinkedIn, it's tnash.
Tnash. Excellent. And Chris?
Chris Wigman, just about everything. ChrisWigman.com, GitHub, Twitter, you name it. So
cool. Definitely some cool people to follow, so go and do that now, I would suggest. Do subscribe to our channel if you don't want to miss out on any of our content, particularly obviously these episodes. In March, which is our next episode, we are talking about sustainable web development with WordPress, and we've got Hannah Smith, Jack Lennox and Tom Greenwood to talk about that, so that should be an exciting episode. I also want to point you a bit of a plug in the direction of my live WordPress plugin development playlist. So I'm starting that again on Thursday. So if you want to watch me flap around in code like the last episode, then please do think about following me on there. Thanks again so much to Tim and Chris. It was great having a chat with you. And thanks to all you guys who tuned in on YouTube as well. That's all for now. And we will see you next month.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us.